From UFOs to psychic powers and government conspiracies, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know.
Hello, welcome back to the show. My name is Matt.
My name is Noel.
I am Ben, you are you, hopefully, and that makes this stuff they don't want you to know. Let's get into this with a personal story first. Do you guys have any experiences in parks?
Yeah, I've been to several national parks with the family over the years. Uh-huh. Took a trip out to the Grand Canyon, which was really nice, with a couple of friends. Never done anything insane though at these places. Mm. Usually it's just hiking on, you know, for a day and then going back to a campsite or just going back to the car and heading home or to a hotel.
Actually, in my, outside of my hometown in Augusta, Georgia, there is a national park called Finnazzy Swamp Nature Park. And I had something of a spiritual awakening there, let's say.
Okay.
There's a little area where you walk out onto this dock, this kind of like winding bridge that goes over the swamp, and you end up on this sort of like floating little pier that's out in the middle of the swamp, and it's just like covered in neon green, you know, muck. And there were just thousands of tiny little blue insects that they call no-see-ums. You guys know about these in the South? Mm-hmm. Not sure what they call them elsewhere. But they're very tiny, and they are blue, and they are very easy to breathe in. And there were just clouds of them all around my head. And every time I breathed in, I felt like they were going inside me.
Did they?
It's probably
possible. Probably a few. Yeah, probably they're very possible. Small.
Mm-hmm. Ooh.
Yeah.
So that sort of derailed my spiritual awakening there.
Yeah, sure.
But it was beautiful up to that point.
Nice.
So I also have had experiences in parks. There is a park here in Georgia in the Atlanta metro area called Arabia Mountain.
Yes.
I was just talking to a friend about that. So, she said it looks like you're walking on the surface of the moon.
Yeah, it's different. It's part of the basaltic extrusion that formed Stone Mountain, which is another strange place to visit and also a park. The reason that we're talking about this today is because the U.S. has an amazing system of public land. And despite the political changes that the country undergoes every, you know, 4, 8, or 2, or 6 years or whatever, regardless of how the tide shifts, people seem to, in general, as a culture, respect and want to keep this stuff wild. And every so often, you'll hear stories about government agencies privatizing it or allowing businesses to do this, that, or the third there. But the fact remains that the U.S. National Park System is an amazing institution. I almost got to go on a road trip to Yellowstone when I was in high school. My parents wouldn't let me go because they didn't trust the guy, a slightly older guy we knew, who would be driving. And they were pretty sure that we were going to do a lot of drugs.
Sure.
Try to sleep around with some fellow campers and stuff, all of which I'm sure would have been true had I gone. But had I gone, I would also be one of the proud visitors to the first ever national park in the U.S., which is Yellowstone, right?
Mm-hmm.
Founded by Ulysses Grant on March 1st, 1872. It actually predates the National Park Service.
Not to be confused with Jellystone, which clearly derived, you know, its name from Yellowstone.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah. It's all coming together.
So, Noel, the National Park Service, as Ben said, Yellowstone predated the actual National Park Service because that was created by Woodrow Wilson on August the 25th, 1916, several years after Yellowstone was established.
Full circle, Woodrow Wilson is from my hometown of Augusta, Georgia.
Whoa.
Crazy.
The Woodrow Wilson Boyhood Home. It's an historic site there.
Have you been there?
I have.
Name doesn't exactly roll off the tongue.
Fun to say, kind of.
It is. Do you think one can only hope for the kind of success that makes people reconstruct and preserve your boyhood home?
Oh, man. Yeah. Wouldn't that be great? People would be so unimpressed with mine.
Really?
You think so?
Is born in a yurt?
No.
No, I wasn't. All right. So we have a, it'd be cool though. There's plenty of room for a yurt or nomadic existence in the national park system today, ladies and gentlemen. This is huge. It has 410 areas. Mm-hmm. And when there's a reason we use the word areas, and there are more than 84 million acres all told.
Yeah. And this goes throughout every state in the contiguous United States, the continental U.S., and expands out to the District of Columbia, which is still inside the United States, mm-hmm. but not exactly a state. The American Samoa, Guam, Puerto Rico, and even the Virgin Islands.
Mm-hmm. And so why are we calling these areas instead of just parks?
So some of them aren't exactly parks, right? You've got something like a monument that's been erected somewhere. The surrounding area of that monument might be considered an area of a, of the national park system. Let's say a battlefield where a battle from the Civil War took place, something mm-hmm. like that. That isn't necessarily a park of any kind in itself or a nature preserve, but the area needs to be maintained.
Yeah, this also includes lakeshores, seashores, scenic rivers, trails, and, oddly enough,
the White House?
Yeah, the White House. The
area, wait, what?
The area of the White House is also considered one of the areas under the purview of the National Park Service.
So, like, when they mow the lawn at the White House, those are, like, park
I feel like it's,
people?
Yeah,
that's
I feel like
I was
it's
thinking too.
Trying to get away, like, oh, well, yeah, we'll do, put the lawn mowing in under here. That's where the budget will come from.
Perhaps. Or perhaps if you work for the Park Service, you can write in and tell us a little bit about that. Either way, this is a runaway success. In 2015 alone, how many people went to national parks?
It was upwards of 307 million.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a ton of peoples.
Mm-hmm.
It is a ton of people, and this isn't something we really discussed in advance, but bringing it up to the modern day, pretty interesting story I heard in NPR a few weeks ago, specifically about Joshua Tree National Park, and it applies to pretty much all of them, how there are so many historic structures at these parks, like mm-hmm. from cabins to just different buildings that are falling into horrible disrepair, not to mention the amount of money and effort it requires to maintain the grounds, cutting back foliage and things mm-hmm. like that. And just, mm-hmm. you know, just you own a house, man. You know how much of a pain it is just to keep up your yard.
Yeah.
Can you imagine having to do it for acres and acres and acres of national park land? Mm-hmm. So apparently these parks today have these intense lists of problems and things, but there's just not enough money to cover the cost.
Well, yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, like you said, it's crazy expensive. And I guess when you're looking at a budget, it might be difficult to, you know, convince someone that this is where a priority is.
Yeah, the National Park Service is part of the Bureau of the Interior. If we're following, you know, the budgetary money, mm-hmm. It's composed of more than 22,000 employees, paid employees, and 220,000 or so volunteers.
Wow. That's who gets the work done.
And I just found the stat from the story. I just wanted to throw this out there and we can move
yeah.
on. There is a, according to this NPR piece, nearly $12 billion maintenance backlog of work that needs to be accomplished, but there just isn't the money in Jeez. The budget for the parks. I just thought that was interesting.
I mean, some people would say that the U.S. is lucky that the parks still exist. Other people would say that there's something completely different to this story, that there's something different going on. And we'll get to that in just a moment. But first,
a quick word from our sponsor.
Here's where it gets crazy. So out of the, what was it, Noel, upwards of 307 million?
307,247,252 to be precise.
Oh, you've got the numbers, yeah.
Whoa.
Well, three of those were us and listeners. Odds are that some of those people were also you. And if you're like many of these people, you visit for a day hike, a mm-hmm. few hours, maybe a weekend, maybe you take a couple weeks and go down a river or get really into some strange Thoreau, Walden stuff and, or Emerson stuff, and then sometimes people just don't come out at all. People disappear in national parks.
and they disappear for different reasons. There are some people who disappear who do it on purpose.
Oh yeah, just don't want to live off, don't want to live on the grid anymore, right?
I mean, I've had that inclination a couple of times in my life.
I think we all have. There's something so tempting about just, you know, disappearing, walking into the forest, never to return, hopping a train to the great horizon, you know.
I have to admit, when we started the show back in 08, when we started production, midway through 2009, I really felt like, oh my gosh, dude. We have to get off the grid right now, all of us. Anyone who is awake right now needs to leave, go to the woods, and just learn how to farm.
They make it really difficult for you to do that. Just, I mean, just in terms of like dealing with city government,
logistics,
you know,
yeah.
Logistics. I mean, I actually just saw the story, court rules living off the grid is illegal out of Cape Coral, Florida, where basically someone has sort of like a tiny house situation out in the woods and unplugged from municipal services. And that was ruled by a court in Cape Coral to be illegal. A magistrate judge actually said that this individual is not allowed to live on her own private property without being hooked up to the city's water system.
Is it a health and human services?
Exactly. That's the thing. There's always some reason, you know, and I think it's absurd, but it's interesting. And, you know, that hints maybe disappearing is the only way to do it.
Right. And we'll do an episode about how to disappear if we haven't yet. It's pretty fascinating. I think Stuff You Should Know did a piece about living off the grid. If you would like to check that out, listeners. So for people who willingly disappear, people who become modern hermits, there's an example of a guy named Daniel Suelo, who quit using money in 2000 and then moved to some canyons near a place called Arches National Park. And he's been living in these different caves tucked into these nooks of sandstone. And he just doesn't want to practice anything related to money. You can read some great, stories about him on The Atlantic. And, of course, an internet search will show you some of his various trials, travails, his ups and downs.
Yeah, there's a great article on The Atlantic that you shared, Ben, that it kind of goes through his beliefs almost and why he's doing it. It's pretty interesting. Talks a lot about capitalism.
Right. And some people temporarily reside in national parks, such as members of the Rainbow Family gatherings, you know, which is another fascinating topic. And in either of these above cases, yes. Ladies and gentlemen, it is absolutely possible that some individuals in these situations may be running from the law or from other institutions, maybe an abusive spouse, or in some cases, breaking it. Because let's say you're an active member of a militia, or you're a felon who is on the run with some priors, you can disappear. It's way easier to disappear in America than people make you think. It's not easy by any stretch.
Sure. And it's much easier to disappear in, let's say, a woods or an isolated area than it would be in the middle of a city where you have to go procure things or something.
Yeah, not to mention all the closed circuit cameras that exist in a situation, traffic cameras, things like that that just aren't out there. You know, you might have the occasional park ranger snooping around, you know, trying to make sure you're not stealing any picnic baskets. But, you know, barring picnic basket theft, you're probably...
Well, we're gonna get into some picnic basket theft.
So, for instance, some people might move nomadically from one site to the next. People who travel for alternative community or intentional community kind of gatherings. But they might still have little interaction with the mainstream world, which in the Rainbow Gatherings is referred to as Babylon.
I need to learn more about the Rainbow Gatherings.
You can go. I'm sure they'd be happy to see you.
I might have to try it out, guys.
A lot of hula hooping, right?
I imagine there's some hula hooping involved.
Probably not competitive, though. It's just hula hooping for hula hooping's sake.
They don't seem like the most competitive group of people. But if anybody's been to a Rainbow Gathering, we'd like to hear about it, right?
Yeah.
With your experience.
I am teasing. I have always just in the past associated it with like people that like follow bands or something, like Fish or like the Grateful Dead, like it being sort of that same kind of scene. But I could be entirely wrong.
Oh, I could completely see that. So in those cases, people might have a largely off the grid or disappeared life, but interact with the mainstream world sporadically or as needed. And this goes to the picnic basket example.
Yes, this goes to the wild man of central Maine. His real name is Christopher Thomas Knight. Again, awesome article on this dude. I think it's in GQ.
Yes.
Okay. So I just want to say, first off, this guy, I kind of want to be him, but then as you continue reading on, no, maybe not. Maybe that's a bad idea. This gentleman, when he was 20 years old, just took off into the woods. He said it was around the time, because he didn't know what year it was when he was asked by the people who apprehended him eventually.
When he was finally captured.
Yes. So this guy was living in the woods, and what he would do is he would break into, let's say, a cabin that's on property somewhere.
Sure, where people camp seasonally.
Sure, exactly. And just take whatever he could from there, or break into, let's say,
a yurt.
Break into a yurt or, a larger facility mm-hmm. where food is stored mm-hmm. and would break in there, take what he needed, and then continue on. And
clothing, books, beer, yes. food.
Possibly even like a shed where they keep boats or things like that, or like equipment.
I mean, the guy was pretty masterful with tools, being able to get into things. And, you know, a lot of times keys are stored in a place like that where it's a facility used by a park service or
and
something.
And he was legendary in the area. He was known as Wild Man of Central Maine, as mentioned before. When he was arrested and finally caught, he was sentenced to 7 months in jail and probation. And at the time of this recording, he is slowly rehabilitating into society. He has a brother.
Yeah. What was the story though? When he was discovered, was he just like, he had to kind of be reintegrated more like ultimately he just was not, he had not been around people at all.
For 27 years. People.
And they suspect that he may be somewhere on the Asperger's autism spectrum, but they're at this point, I don't know if that's confirmed or if it's just the amount of time living in such solitude that has affected his behavior in a way that they might confuse with that.
Do we know what led him to this life? Was it homelessness? I'm interested.
I don't believe it was homelessness. This decision though, it seemed like it was a snap impulse. Maybe he just had it with people.
Like when Forrest Gump just wanted to run.
Right. Right. Or when everybody in that REM video just gets out of their car.
Powerful moment.
That's a powerful moment. I always think of that moment. One time I did try it in bad traffic. I got out of my car and I stood there, but no one walked out with me. So next time you're in traffic, folks, if you happen to see Noel or Matt or I get out of a car, just hop out long enough to say hi.
So the thing that sticks with me about this story is the Wild Man of Maine is that he was a legendary being that existed in this area where people would talk about him, would say, oh, you better lock up tight. You know, the Wild mm-hmm. Man of Maine might be coming around,
like,
or
cropsy,
don't. Yeah, don't leave anything out. Wild Man of Maine.
The Jersey Devil. Around.
And then he became a reality. And he's a myth that became real, which
he
is
never,
pretty cool.
Never hurt anybody, right?
Well, no, no.
Not
you know,
that we know of.
Yeah, exactly. There's no evidence.
So other people have disappeared fatally in national parks. And these are people, you know, who break their leg in a remote place, take a bad fall, are murdered perhaps, because again, it's an isolated area.
Drowning is big.
Drowning is huge, which ties into possibly the Smiley Face Killer, different type of show, maybe an episode in the future. Some of these disappearances remain unexplained to this day. There's a How Stuff Works article on 10 mysterious disappearances in national parks. Just for one example, in 1997, a 73-year-old man named John Devine mysteriously disappeared in the Olympic National Park in northern Washington state. That's interesting because he's not the first hiker that's disappeared from there. Over the past 25 years, at least four that we know of have disappeared.
And yeah, he was with a friend when he went missing. There's a lot of strange stuff to his story.
That's right. So what's the cause? What is the single cause or one of the causes? What's making this happen? What gives? To answer that question, we checked out some work recommended to us by you, written by an author named David Paulides.
Yeah, and he actually wrote a series of books about these disappearances, the Missing 411 series, about different regions and different situations. One is Western U.S. and Canada. There's another one on the Eastern United States, one on North America and beyond. Then there is one called The Devils in the Details as well. And he's also written quite a few books about the cryptid known as Bigfoot.
Ah, right. Yes, that's something that... In some cases, well, some sources feel that damages his credibility, right? Because for a lot of people, if you write a thing about a cryptid, especially a cryptid of that size or that popularity, then they will tend to look askance at any other work you do for the record in the Missing 411 series. While Paul Itis makes imply some stuff about a cryptid, he never says these people were clearly... killed by a Yeti.
So at some point when Mr. Politis kind of got on this route of, wow, there seem to be a lot of people that go missing in national parks.
Yeah, a park ranger asked him to look into it.
Yes, and he tried to find more information, and he seemed to hit a couple brick walls. So it led him further and further down this road of trying to explain what happens to all these people, and is there some kind of common thread that links them together?
Right. Have they nailed down a theory? So here's some possible causes for these rashes of disappearances in no particular order. First, as we mentioned, accidents. It's going to happen. Let's walk through these and the pros and cons of both.
Okay.
So a pro, at least in terms of the likelihood of accidents occurring, the woods are huge. Many people are not familiar with them, and you're in isolated areas where a slip on the path can make you break your leg, or if you have a head injury and you're in the backyard of nowhere, then it is possible that could be it for you. If you don't have a method of contacting someone else, that's why, you know, if you go into a wilderness, you should always, always have at the very least someone back in the civilization who expects to hear from you by a certain amount of time.
Right? Yeah, but even that might not save you because
it might not.
These areas are so vast.
And one big con for the likelihood of accidents would be that we know not all of these things are just human error or accidents. There have been attacks, you know, animals have attacked people. Mm-hmm. People have been murdered, you know, bodies have been found mangled and stuff like that.
You know, I forgot actually another national park that I've been to part of is a site in the Chattahoochee National Forest, called Anna Ruby Falls, which is
yes.
Wonderful.
It's beautiful.
Glorious.
Yeah.
But you go there. There are a lot of little nooks with signs basically saying, don't step here or you will die instantly.
Right.
And you see it and you're like, yeah, I would die. Like that would happen. And I mean, and it's like that all over these spots, and it's wet. It's slippery. There's, mm-hmm. you know, a waterfall. And there's,
yeah.
And again, like I was talking about earlier, the infrastructure in some of these spots, not exactly up to par a lot of times. So you got to think that there are opportunities for people to maybe be going into an area after hours or mm-hmm. going around. Maybe they fell over a rail. Maybe, you know, a slat and a bridge broke. There's a lot of possibilities. And I know they do try to cordon off these areas where you can't get to them, but people can be pretty tenacious.
Heck, maybe they just got lost.
Right.
You know, that's one of the most terrifying things is how easily someone can get lost in the woods. It's not that search parties do a bad job. It's just that the game is rigged. It's really difficult. So another thing, another likelihood, possibility, animals. You know, animals
sure.
have attacked people. There aren't that many types of large animal that would attack something like a person.
Yeah, and it's going to vary per region. Where you're talking about the animals out in California that you might have to worry about are going to be a little different than the animals you have to worry about if you're in, let's say, the Everglades in Florida.
Like how?
We're talking about a bear, like perhaps, or we're talking about a gator, maybe a mountain lion.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, out in Colorado, I just remember Joe Rogan talking about an attack on his dog from, I believe, a mountain lion.
Or coyote or coy wolves mm-hmm. as well. So we know those creatures exist. We know that in some cases they will attack human beings. One of the cons to this is that animal attacks, as far as we know, the official record, seem to be fairly rare in comparison to other people. And then, you know, you can often find some sort of evidence, you know, bones or something. Mm-hmm. As soon as you die, no matter how you die, as soon as you die in the wild, there's an army of creatures, scavengers, predators, microorganisms that fall upon the sweet, sweet buffet that used to be you. And they eat your eyes and your tongue and your other soft parts. And then other creatures come in. It's in your a pile of bones in a nifty North Face jacket. That last personal detail, I guess we didn't need to add.
I got stuck on sweet, sweet buffet that used to be you.
It's true.
I like that.
Apparently a lot of times they start with your feet.
Oh yeah?
I was reading an article about like the bacteria in feet is pleasing to carrion.
Whoa. Birds of prey.
I'd always heard even more disturbing perhaps that they start at your soft bits, like your face, your tongue, your genitals.
Genitals. Well, there are other possibilities besides that, which would be crime. A drug deal gone bad.
This makes me think of the fantastic episode of The Sopranos called The Pine Barrens, wherein kind of forget what happens exactly, what the crime was, but somebody ends up getting it. So the Pine Barrens are actually, they're referred to as several different things. The Pinelands, the New Jersey Pinelands, are a national park area in New Jersey that is about 1.1 million acres, just to give you the scope of some of these types of areas. And like I said in the episode, the whole crux is that they are trying to hide a body, and it's clearly considered a pretty solid place to do a thing like that, you know.
Yeah, you've heard you out there have probably heard the Pine Barrens mentioned in Pulp Fiction and other, not the movie Pulp Fiction, just throughout Pulp Fiction, when involving the mafia, especially in New Jersey. Yeah, seems like a prime spot.
Although that would not account necessarily for missing visitors, you know. What were you saying, Ben, about some drug deals gone bad? Like maybe that's a place where they would meet to do the drug deal because it's such a rural area where there's maybe not going to be as many people around. Yeah. Something goes bad. Nobody ever leaves.
An accident happens on a camping trip. You want to fake your death or you want to commit suicide. You want it to be a new person, which we should do that episode here.
Another thing to think about here is abduction, like child abduction. There was one case in that article, the How Stuff Works article, the 10 mysterious disappearances. A kid, I believe his name is David Gonzalez. He was going to his car to get some cookies out of the car. Mom was like 50 yards away. And then all of a sudden, kid's gone. Can't find him. And I think they saw a truck like leaving really fast out of the park area. But anyway, it's just that kind of thing. That kind of thing must happen. Right? It seems like a perfect place to target someone who's isolated and not in their own element.
Right. And the thing here is that whatever these causes may be, Paul Ides does not specifically trace it to one thing yet, though they say they're narrowing down suspects. Whatever the cause of this may be, this author and his supporters argue that there are clusters of information here, three types of clusters. One, a cluster in terms of geography. Like, for instance, Yosemite National Park is one of the clusters that he cites, with 46-something disappearances occurring, some where the bodies were later found, some where no body was recovered. He also says that there are clusters in terms of chronology, certain times of the year or certain years people seem to disappear more frequently. And then there's a type of person who disappears more frequently, the very young, the elderly. And according to these books, many times when people are recovered, they have some of the same, they have some things in common. For instance, they have wounds, light wounds or clothing torn. They have little to no memory of the event. They're located further than one would imagine they could travel on their own. That being said, Paul Ides believes there is a conspiracy afoot of some sort, that the National Park Service is not being on the up and up, right?
Yeah, when he tried to get more information, as we mentioned earlier, from the National Park System through Freedom of Information Act requests, he seemed to be stonewalled a bit. At least that's what he thought at first, until he realized wait, there isn't a lot of good record keeping when it comes to missing people in these areas. Everything as simple as names and dates and times. It's just not, it wasn't at least at the time being collected.
And he also claims that he had several Freedom of Information Act requests that were denied.
Yes.
When he asked for more information. At this point, this author is continuing their investigation into the possible causes of these disappearances. I will say that given that there are more than 1,000 or so cases that he has cataloged, I would say it's difficult to imagine that these are all attributable to a single cause.
I would go so far as to say it's impossible that they're all the exact same thing.
I'm hesitant to say impossible, but I would be surprised. I would buy
improbable?
A lot. Improbable?
Improbable. Highly, yes, highly.
Improbable. I would buy a lottery ticket.
Yes.
If it turned out that kind of math works. So at this point.
But you don't buy a lottery ticket?
No, I don't buy a lottery
ticket. That tickets. Is like a rule, a Ben Bolin rule.
No, I'll buy a lottery ticket for someone as a present.
Just for fun?
No.
Have you ever gotten lottery tickets as a stocking stuffer?
I have.
Me too.
It's a really sad stocking stuffer. Well, especially when you get a roll of them and you win nothing. You win another ticket from a roll. Anyway, I'm sorry.
The potential is there, okay? Happened. It may be tiny, but it's potential.
So, yeah. So we're at a point now where this investigation led by Paul Ides continues. Some of the more skeptical in the world of this conversation have pointed out that, of course, there's a reason it's called the wilderness. People get lost, people get hurt, people miscalculate, people can unfortunately die. And that can be a completely mundane explanation. However, Paul Ides and other investigators as well believe that there is something more afoot, that there is a cover up on the part of Uncle Sam. So without claiming to know what could or could not be causing these disappearances, instead, the author does say that there is an active stonewalling occurring. Mm-hmm. Is that the mm-hmm. phrase you used?
Yeah,
there?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a very good point. We want to know what you think. Do people disappear in national parks? Is there what do you think the cause of it is? Do you think that there could be some sort of cryptid involved? To me, that's a little bit tough to conjecture, especially if it's something that would be the size of a primate. You know what I mean?
Can I give you a story about that, Ben?
Just sure,
lead people's minds down this road here.
Please do.
On the website VistaramicJourneys.com. This is a group of people who've looked at the missing 411 books and kind of taken exact places where people allegedly went missing and then taken a panoramic photo of the spot where they supposedly went missing. And there's one story on here about a dude named Christopher Tompkins, who was on an isolated road in Georgia, walking behind several other guys. They were working together, and one of the other gentlemen claims to have turned around and Christopher was no longer there as they were walking along this road. They ended up finding parts of his clothing. One of his boots was right behind them. They found some of his clothing on a barbed wire fence a little ways away, and they found some more of his clothing, another boot even further away from that. And this all took place within a matter of minutes or less than that. And I don't know, that's one of those situations where it makes me kind of go, well, how in the heck did that happen without something really big either carrying him away, unless he just got super excited and ran?
Right, like a large bird, for instance.
Maybe.
Or a drone. Yes, the possibilities stretch forward, and we would like to hear from you. So let us know, do you think these people disappeared due to mundane causes? Do you think that there is something more organized at work? And let's also keep in mind that given the in terms of the number of people who attend these parks, relatively few, so far as we know, are actually going missing. So let us know. And then if you just have a story about something creepy that you have found in a national park or encountered and you are comfortable telling us, we'd love to hear that too. It might make it to the air. Speaking of listeners, I think it's time for
Shout Out Corners.
Our first shout out comes from Augustina, who says, someone from Panama would like you to talk about the Panama Papers. Also, a shout out would be cool.
Shout out to you, Augustina, and we are on it. Act surprised.
Yes, as soon as it came out, you know, all three of us were just attached to our computers.
Gasp. Second shout out goes to Evelyn Rowell, a photographer who listens to the show while she's retouching images. Quote, I think Tyson stole your opening. Go listen to the opening of Star Talk. It sounds suspiciously similar.
Yeah, I don't know.
I haven't checked that out, but I appreciate the tip. And retouching images, huh? Changing history. What's that thing about Stalin? The kid stays in the picture. Of course, we're kidding, Evelyn. Big shout out to you, and thank you so much for writing. I'm going to check out this Star Talk, outfit.
It's pretty good.
About.
It is good, and I don't recall the theme, but I need to give it another listen.
It's new to me. You guys know I'm not out and about. So our last shout out of the day, of the week, really goes to Simon. Simon wrote in to say, commenting on our AMA at Above Top Secret. So it was Scully, Harvey Oswald, and the Illuminats with their breakout hit, Roswell That Ends Well. Because we released a picture of the four of us, and we thought, hey, this looks kind of like a band.
Yeah, we were around Scully like she was the lead, and we were the Illuminats.
We're working on the mixtape, yeah. Simon.
Yeah, we're working on the mixtape. You can pay for it in stolen Nazi gold.
Or Ben Bucks.
Or Ben Bucks.
Only. Those two things only.
Well, you got to convert your stolen Nazi gold to Ben Bucks.
I mean, that's just how the economy is.
And the exchange rate's not in your favor,
yeah,
let me tell
not.
You.
It's rigged. I can't believe we started out with such an idealistic currency, and then 3 weeks in, we've become the monsters
that we were fighting in the first place.
We've become the monsters we fought in the first place.
It's a shame.
Yeah, we're mostly kidding about that. But if you would like a shout out, let us know. If you'd like to see that picture, you can find us on Twitter, and it's on our Facebook as well, I believe. Both of those are Conspiracy Stuff. And if you want to hear every podcast that Noel, Matt, and I have ever done, then check out our website, stufftheywantyoutoknow.com, where you can hear those podcasts for free.
That's right, the biggest URL in the history of the world. What up? But if you go there, once you get there one time, you'll always want to go back. I can promise you that. If you don't want to do any of that stuff that we just mentioned, you can always send us a message. We are
conspiracy@howstuffworks.com.